La 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 la.
That's you singing, Wendy. You can't fool me.
We just have
That's
some
not
music
real music.
There.
It's time to talk to Dr. Adam Bennett. Dr. Bennett used to be the team physician for the Chicago Blackhawks. He's also a team physician for U.S. soccer. That's the men's and women's national team. Has done some work for the Bears as well. And we wanted to talk to you, Dr. Bennett, today about injuries in youth sports primarily, but we want to branch out into a couple of different topics. Thanks for being here.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
Dr. Bennett, we talked about Mike Adamley, NBC5 newscaster, former football player with the Bears and Northwestern, and he has just come out and said that he is suffering from CTE. We then got on conversations about, you know, I don't have athletes in my family. Bill has girls. What do you do when you have a kid who is good at football and likes football? Are parents scared to let their kids play football these days?
It's a great question. It's something I think not just football deals with, but youth hockey, youth soccer, basketball, you know, all those activities are not immune to injuries. And concussions, I think, are at the forefront now because we're just learning more and more about the potential long-term consequences. So on the other hand, you want your kids to be healthy and active and to live a healthy lifestyle. So it's a real balance between getting them out there, doing activities that they love, to make friendships with and to be healthy with, and also to avoid injuries. So I think it's a balance. I think a lot of youth programs are taking a very close look at how do you strike that balance between changing some of the rules, changing some of the formats, and keeping kids healthy and uninjured and out playing and you know, not on the sidelines injured.
But Dr. Bennett, when you look at what the game of football is, you got big, strong guys constantly banging into each other and trying their best to knock each other down. It's inevitable that these are going to end with some sort of brain injury, right? I don't know how you get around that.
Yeah, I mean, I think you look at any activity, any trauma to whether it's your brain, your knee, and your entire body, you can have injuries. So. And I think we're learning, like I said earlier, more and more about what concussions can do down the road. And I think right now there's a lot more questions than answers. So, you know, it's a lot of it is erring on the side of safety. I've been with the Bears since 2004, and in how we manage concussions, even in 2004 compared to the 90s, was very different. And now it's drastically different between how it was in 2004. So, I think taking a safety-first approach and recognizing that there may be long-term consequences to some of these injuries is sort of has been a good approach. I think we don't know all in all what's in store over the next 5 to 10 years in terms of some of the long-term issues.
Dr. Adam Bennett on the line with us, Assistant Professor of Family and Community Medicine at Northwestern Orthopedic Institute, also on staff Northwestern, North Shore University Health System, St. Joseph's Hospital. We were also talking about the CTE and concussions happening when it's like a head-on-head collision. But now I thought I read reports that even, you know, if you're tackled and your body is stationary, you get tackled, your head moves back. Is that all kind of connected to this, or does it have to be a head-to-head collision?
So when it comes to concussions, it's surprising. I mean, it seems some of the more innocuous blows can lead to concussions, and we know this from boxing, that if you get hit in your jaw and you turn your head sideways, even a less than significant force or not even a high like velocity force can create a concussion, where sometimes a big hit right to the forehead doesn't lead to any problems. So, yes, to answer your question, mild trauma to the head can lead to concussion. Sometimes more significant forces won't lead to any problems as it relates to concussions, mostly because of the forces that the brain experiences. And a quick sort of whip-like force seems to be more likely to lead to a concussion than sort of a direct to a forehead sort of force.
Can these players who played for years in the NFL and had concussions over the years but don't seem to be experiencing any of the side effects, do they have a bleak future even if they've gone a couple of years from their playing days and don't seem to have any trouble? Is there trouble ahead?
Well, I hope not. But, I mean, at this point, I wouldn't assume that they have a bleak future just because as we learn more and more about it, and certainly the evidence is concerning. But, you know, humans are designed to heal. There's a lot of other variables, I think, when it comes to different chemical levels in the body and genetic differences between people. And I think a lot of that stuff's being looked at. Everything to use of fish oils and other sort of preventative strategies that vary from person to person. So I think just because someone has played football and has had concussions doesn't mean they have a bleak future. I myself played college soccer. I had numerous concussions, and so far so good. But it is something I worry about. But, you know, I think as we learn more and more and about the genetic differences from person to person, we'll be able to answer those questions a lot better.
There was an article recently in the New York Times saying that the USA Football, the national governing body for amateur football, is talking about introducing an altered youth football game. More what, like flag football with fewer players? What are they doing about this?
So that's called modified tackling football. And if you look at their website, they actually do a nice description of what they're trying to accomplish here. You have flag football, which is very popular. My kid actually currently plays that. Then you have an 11v11 full field tackle football, which is sometimes being played by 6, 7, 8-year-olds. What they're trying to do is develop a program that sort of bridges developmentally the skills necessary to go from a young 6, 7, 8-year-old to a 15, 16, 17-year-old high school football player that really teaches a lot of skills, a lot of agility, and is less focused on tackling, on big hits. And I think it does, one, it helps develop skills, and two, it helps prevent injuries. I think that they're developing it. I think they've piloted it in Cleveland, in a community in Indiana, and got good feedback, but they're not jumping to anything just yet. They're developing it and piloting it over a couple of years, and then they're going to come up with a more, I think, concrete set of rules and very clear guidelines for ages and number of players and rule changes. But at this point, I think it's more of a player development issue, which is common in youth soccer. For example, they have younger kids. It used to be, when I grew up, it was 11v11 at age 4, and you have a bunch of kids just standing around. And now it's 4v4 at young ages, and then 6v6, and then 8v8, and then 11v11. I think football is kind of modeling that, which I actually think is a good thing, because the kids tend to run more, be more active, and often get less injured. So I think those are all good things.
All right, we have some listeners that have some questions for you, so we're going to take a quick break and continue talking with Dr. Adam Bennett. He is with a lot of places: North Shore University Health System, Northwestern Memorial Hospital, St. Joseph Hospital, and Assistant Professor of Family and Community Medicine at Northwestern Orthopedic Institute. 312-981-7200. If you have some questions about football or CTE, we're here to answer them. It's Bill and Wendy, 720 WGN.
It is us. It's Bill and Wendy. We're talking sports medicine and sports injuries with Dr. Adam Bennett. Dr. Bennett practices sports medicine at North Shore University's health system. He has worked with the Chicago Blackhawks, with the U.S. soccer men's and women's national team, and with the Bears. It was your idea, Dr. Bennett, to raise ticket prices, I read. Is that true?
Absolutely my idea. Really fully in favor of it.
Great idea.
All right.
Pay the doctors more.
All right. We have listeners that have a couple of questions for you. And let's begin with Ruth. Hi, Ruth. This is Dr. Adam Bennett.
Hi there. Okay. Hi. I just wondered, when my granddaughter was five, oh, she's five now, when she was three, crawling under the coffee table, she got up thinking, you know, she didn't realize, and she hit her head. And within a short time, she threw up. So she was taken to the hospital, and they said she did have a concussion. So basically, that happens frequently, or with young children or something.
And are there any, you know, long-term effects from...
No, I mean, she's very good. And I like the last caller, because when we play Old Maid, we do it in memory. Turn the cards over, and when you pick one up, see if you remember where you saw it before.
Keeps your brain fresh.
Sure.
She's good.
But Dr. Bennett, a one-time event like that, although it can be dangerous, it's nothing compared to what athletes are going through who are subjected to that often, correct?
Yeah, and I think a couple of things. Kids, I mean, their skull isn't fully formed, so they actually tolerate head trauma a lot better, because any swelling in the brain is tolerated by the skull not being sort of a closed environment. Kids' brains develop, I mean, they're very what we call plastic, meaning they can develop even if they've had a stroke or other problems. Kids tend to grow out of that, so to speak, a lot better. That said, their brain is also, I think, a little more fragile. So mild concussion, a kid might, you know, take longer to heal. They might throw up. They might have difficulty concentrating. I mean, my 12-year-old, you know, got a concussion at school and then was walking in the hallways. Another kid just threw a basketball and hit him in the head, and his symptoms last another 2 or 3 weeks longer. That's not uncommon in children. So that's why a lot of the scientific community in sports medicine has moved towards some rules limiting exposure to concussions, whether it's in football or soccer, because we know that the kids, you know, 12 and under.
Right.
Sorry about your granddaughter, but the good news is, you know, those are usually not very common, and kids tend to do very well despite occasionally getting a ding in the head.
Appreciate your call, Ruth.
Thanks,
we really
Ruth.
Do.
Thank you.
Pete is on the line and has a question for you as well. Hi, Pete. This is a great question for Dr. Bennett.
Hi, Wendy. Hi, Bill. Hi, Dr. Bennett.
Hi,
yeah,
Pete.
They play full contact football in Australia, and I know rugby is also a heavy contact sport. Have they done concussion studies on those sports as related to using helmets, because they don't use helmets?
Mm-hmm.
That's a great question. Do you know, sometimes you think with those old leather helmets that they wore, that the Bears wore and other football teams, without that extra protection, perhaps they didn't hit each other as hard as they do now. Any truth to that?
Yeah, I mean, that's something where we've looked at. The tackling technique in rugby and Australian rules football is a little bit different. They don't tend to lead with their head. And that's some of the origin of the heads-up football movement in USA football that they developed a few years ago, trying to tackle more upright and more of a rugby style. So concussions still occur in those sports, and you know, they have a little bit more head trauma, lacerations, things like that, that we see less often in hockey and American football because of the helmet. But it's a good point. It's something that people have looked at a lot, on just more of techniques of tackling and how different it is when you're not wearing a helmet and you have to kind of protect your face, your nose, and your skull, which sometimes in years ago they used to use the helmet as a sort of a weapon, as a method of tackling. And that's when helmet spearing was outlawed in the game. And now leading with your head, helmet-to-helmet contact in the NFL is also, that's a penalty. So it's, some of that is based on, you know, just looking at what's happening with rugby and Australian rules football. So it's been actually, I think, helpful in our evolution of looking at concussion. Something, it's a good point, Pete, because it's something that we've looked at in sports medicine, the rates of concussion in other tackling sports, and how are they different and why are they different?
Thank you for your call, Pete. We appreciate it. I was reading, it was signing day at a lot of high schools for seniors that are going on to college, and you're looking at the students that have signed up for various sports. Any advice to parents that are listening right now that have a kid playing football or other sports on how they can help their kids play more safely?
Advice on that. So for one, the good thing I'll tell you about college sports is that you have athletic trainers who are sort of the ground troops when it comes to protecting your kids. They are there at every practice. They're there at, you know, helping even on road trips and even giving them counseling about schools and, or excuse me, about classes and how to function well as a student athlete. So you have athletic trainers who are kind of the medical eyes and ears for all of your children who play college sports. So the one thing I would say is, moving from high school to college, is know that you have medical supervision almost 24/7. And there's now a lot more rules in place in terms of tackling, also in terms of how we manage concussions, how we communicate to your son or daughter's professors in classrooms and saying, hey, look, unfortunately this athlete had a concussion. So for the next 3 weeks, this is going to be their academic schedule to allow them to heal.
Someone else wants to know, their kid was told, it was recommended that my son goes to concussion therapy. Was just wondering what the validity of concussion therapy is and what it is.
So, I mean, it's a long answer, but in short, there's certain exercises you can do that use sort of your vestibular system, which is sort of the balance system in your ears, that you kind of go through a progression that helps your brain heal.
Just if I can, one other quick question. You mentioned that a lot of schools are taking precautions. If an athlete has a concussion, they give them a 2 or 3 week break from sports. Isn't there a fear, though, that a lot of these athletes, just to get noticed by professional teams, won't want to take that 2 or 3 week break because they want to showcase their abilities?
Yeah, but it's sort of non-negotiable. I mean, I've had plenty of high school athletes that say, hey, I have to play this weekend because I have some schools looking at me this weekend, and this is my chance at a scholarship. And
yeah,
unfortunately, there's no good time for an injury. So that's not negotiable. Coaches and trainers know to take a player's helmet away when they get a concussion and know they can't put it back on and play until they've gone through a progression to make sure it's safe for them to return. So while there's always that pressure, whether it's a concussion or a knee injury, ankle injury, you got to return to play once you're healthy and ready. And also, if they're injured, they're not going to go and perform the way they need to get that scholarship.
Sure.
So that's another thing I remind them of.
Very good.
Well, thank you so much. It was a pleasure to talk to you. And again, you know, I don't have athletes, so I don't have to worry about this, but there are a lot of parents listening that do. And Dr. Adam Bennett here to answer some of those questions. We totally appreciate it.
No problem. Have a good afternoon.
You
thank
too,
you.
Dr. Bennett. Thanks so much. We'll take a quick break. We'll find out what Roe and Anna have next. Bill and Wendy, WGN.